correct.
Okay, so people who have not been churched and come into our midst and have the foggiest idea of what you're talking about, they can't possibly understand until you lead them down that same road.
Right.
They have to go down a road that takes them to that place.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
So, been experiencing that.
Very good. Very good. Looking at
the animalistic nature, is there more than just sinfulness in the animalistic nature of man?
Yeah, I mean, it's both positive and negative. You know, your Yetzer Hara is it's the difficulty or the battle that we face, but it's absolutely requisite to life. So, for example, there's teachings that the sages wanted to get rid of the Yetzer Hara, but when they tried to get rid of the Yetzer Hara, they found out that, you know, the chickens wouldn't lay their eggs. Well, this has to do with the fact that, you know, certain aspects may be, you know, natural order, but they're absolutely necessary. What it takes is becoming the master of that through using your desires to accomplish positive spiritual things. So, for example, you know, if you have a propensity towards something, you need to learn how to use it in such a way that it does something positive and uplifting rather than negative. So, yeah, very good, very good. Anything else? Anyone have anything else? Okay. Page 33, we'll start at the beginning. Consequently, beloved, be forewarned to keep guard in order not to fulfill lawless deceit. Okay, one of the things you should always understand when you read the word guard is that the word guard is the Hebrew word shomer. And so shomer has the idea not just of, you know, being careful that you don't get, for example, out in the street at night and somebody shoots you, you would be careful not to go into areas that you didn't belong. But keeping guard, actually in its Hebrew connotations, means that what you do is you are constantly aware of the negativities of particular aspects of life, and you turn around and you use those in a positive way. Okay, so the clause or the little phrase is Shomer Shabbat. When someone says Shomer Shabbat, that means that they guard all the laws and the rules of keeping Shabbat. So they're very careful to keep Shabbat in its appropriate way. But when we say Shomer Shabbat, and we say a person is Shomer Shabbat, we say that that person is not only meticulous about keeping Shabbat and not breaking the rules that are related to Shabbat, that person is also very careful in his life or her life to not break the laws of the Torah to the best of their ability. Now, I never have heard anyone say it other than myself, but as I looked at this particular word some time ago now, Shomer has to do with, again, that idea of guarding or protection, but it's not guarding and protection from trouble. Okay? So, you have a guardian angel. So the guardian angel is not there to make sure that don't fall out yet. It's specific or priority is not guarding you and making sure you don't get in an accident. Yeah, it does those things when they are appropriate. But the guardian angel is trying to get you to live out a Torah-based life. So he was also the one, according to the sages, he is the one who taught you the Torah while you were in your mother's womb. Okay? So if he's the one that taught you the Torah in your mother's womb, then he has a vested interest in you. Okay, so he's invested this time in you, 9 months time in you. And so he's not just going to say, okay, the day that you're born, say, okay, I taught you the Torah, hasta la vista. He's going to see to it that the Torah that he's taught you is being lived out. And for us, almost everyone here has a similar background. So, imagine the amount of time that the guardian angel has spent on you trying to get you to turn toward the Torah observant life. Okay?
I have a question.
Okay, go ahead.
Is it true that each angel has only one job?
Absolutely.
So the guardian angel is only assigned to you, and that's his 24/7 job.
That's it. Absolutely. Okay? And there are angels that are, let's say, eternal. But that for the most part, the angels are they have a job, and they do that job, and then when that job is finished, then they're finished. But we should not, see, it's a difficulty for us, especially us, to think about the angels. Because we generally, from the background that we've come from, we think of these winged creatures that are flying around in the spiritual domain. But the word for an angel is in the same category as the word for work. Okay? And Paul says, he doesn't specifically say angels. What does he say? Principalities, powers, etc. Okay, in Ephesians. So he doesn't just say these are angels. He says these are principalities, these are powers, these are rulers of the cosmos, etc. And he makes a distinction between the different angelic occupations. But the truth is, it's not a creature in the sense of the winged creature that we always envision. Now, there are those that are winged creatures and do various things of that nature. But so the idea is that the angel is a malach, and that's also associated with the idea of being a king or a ruler. So you have all of these words that relate to the idea of the angel. So we could also say, and this perhaps might be a little bit easier to understand in English, that this thing or this creature, if we call it a creature, it doesn't even need to be understood as a creature, but this thing is a job. It has a job. That's what it is. It is a job. And once it finishes its job, it's finished. It's completed. It's accomplished the purpose that we need. Okay? So you buy a vehicle. Okay, the vehicle lasts for how long? And then something's wrong with the vehicle, you trade the vehicle off, and you get another one, okay? So that vehicle, in some sense, you could say, you know, there's a little bit of similarity here, because the angels are not, they're not these, you know, fairy-like little things that are floating around with a wand or whatever. Now, I don't think you necessarily thought that, but They are definitely not just the winged creatures. Now, there are winged creatures, and when it describes them, for example, when we read in Ezekiel and we read places where it talks about the different types of creatures, the only reason you're reading and the only reason it says fundamentally that that's a, quote, angel or whatever is because that's its occupation. That's what it does. Okay, so there are certain angels, if you will, that their occupation is to carry the divine chariot. How long will they last? Eternally. Okay, because they carry the divine chariot. And if he is sent to do a specific job, as you know, the thought that comes to mind is there, nobody wanted to go be the deceiving spirit before this particular king. I don't even remember which king it is. You can hunt it down. But nobody wanted, no angel wanted that job. But this angel said, I'll go and be the deceiving spirit. So he goes and he does his work of deception, and then when his work of deception is done, he's done. So I know that is a far cry from trying to understand the way that we did understand angels. And even what I've said so far is crude, very, very crude. But I will tell you that the best place to study about angels is by the first volume, or if you have, you should have the first volume of the Mishneh Torah. If you're studying with His Eminence, and no, you didn't. Okay, you may have. His Eminence Rabbi Hillel taught from the Mishneh Torah. The first volume you had, it categorized the angels into 10 different categories. Okay? And so you can study those and study the scriptures related. But fundamentally, the idea is the Malach is a job. It is a job. And it does its job, and then it's done with its job. But in some cases, their job is requires much more time. Okay, so for example, Daniel is in Babylon, and the angel says, "Yeah, I would have been here 3 weeks ago when you started the fast, but we had a fight against the king of Persia." Okay, so this quote, prince of Persia, is a Malach that is controlling that particular area, that domain of that particular kingdom, if you will. And we face the same thing. There's a Malach that's over the United States. There's a Malach that's over Texas. There's a Malach that's over Tennessee and Kentucky and etc. There's one, all these things. Okay.
So are there evil Malachs?
Oh, absolutely. 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 And unfortunately, many of the times what happens is that when we do things that we're not supposed to, we actually create that spirit. That creation is then you have to, you work to try to overcome it, obviously, and destroy that thing. But there are many that are, you know, their intention, their job is actually to make it difficult for you or I. Not in the sense of being evil, but being like that in the sense of trying to develop us spiritually. That's the whole ball of wax, okay? When it says in Bereishit, you know, and it was tohu vavohu, it was void and empty, that shows that there's a negativity there that has to be wrestled with, and everything that's positive has something that is designed to contend against it, and that will bring it to its full strength. But Dr. Elisheva and I usually say, you know, she used to lift weights, I did weights, etc. And when you work doing lifting weights, the only way to become Stronger is to take the muscle and bring it to the place of collapse where it cannot any longer, it cannot function. You couldn't pick up, you know, a can of tuna because your muscle is destroyed, so to speak. And then the muscle, when it rebuilds itself, it comes back and it's stronger. And you keep doing that over and over and over. And that's how you come to the place of being able to pick up more weight, etc. But yes, absolutely. This is in the in Ephesians, Hacham Shaul is not talking about this the positive, quote, spirits or angels, Malachim. He's talking about the negative. But these are over these particular areas. And one of the things that's interesting to say is, for example, he knows, and the sages, the Nazarene sages knew that, and the other sages as well, I'm sure, they knew that they were going to go into diaspora. And so this is a great difficulty because you've been living in Hawaii, and you understand the difficulties that you have to live with in Hawaii. But if you move to Texas, you're not in the same place anymore, and it's a whole new ball game. So you have to be acquainted with all of the spirits that are there to come against you. And that is only not even superficial, because there's from time to time there's these things that are sent for tests. And sometimes it's sent as a test, and its job as a test is, again, to bring you to a higher level of spirituality. That's all it is. If you're not put to the test, you never will pass the test, and you will never develop. And so back to the idea that, yeah, negativity or negative ones, absolutely, you have to. But that's the whole process of development and becoming spiritually stronger and et cetera. Okay? Any other questions or comments?
Roulette?
Yes.
You're talking about each state has its own mark or millet. So is that where the Wayfarer's Prayer comes in?
Say that again?
Is that where the Wayfarer's Prayer comes in?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Because you're going into a different domain. You're going into an area that you're not familiar with. I moved from California to Tennessee, and it didn't take me very long to know that not just that, you know, here I'm in a different part of the country, but it didn't take me long to know that I was in a different place where I would confront different spiritual situations, etc. And, you know, you can, there where you're at, let's say in Texas or in Kentucky or whatever, you can have those spirits pretty much under control. You know what you have to deal with, but you go to a different part of the country and it's not the same. But if you do that, then what happens is that, you know, that's a whole part of your spiritual development, puts you to the test in that particular area, to where you're turned into a greater person. I cannot imagine. You know, I have friends in California here and there. I have a brother that lives out there, and you know, I talk to them once in a while, and I cannot imagine living in that world anymore. But at the same time, you know, you might think that, well, you know, the way they say that as California goes, there goes the world. Well, that may be true in one respect, but at the same time, it doesn't mean that you don't increase spiritually by going to some place that's not like California. Okay? So when I came to Tennessee, I I experienced a lot of things that I never experienced in California. Anyway, yeah, so the Wayfarer's Prayer is, you know, a way of protecting you in places that you don't even know to go, okay? Okay, any other questions or comments? Okay, so be forewarned to guard, Shomer, in order not to fall into lawless deceit. So you can see Shomer, you see what I'm saying? Shomer is associated with lawless, which means anomos, which is either against the Torah or without the Torah. And so that means you will live a lawless life, and that can happen through deceit. Okay? Which would withdraw you from your ordination. Here, the idea is like your occupation. Zeman and I were talking about, not this specifically, but talking about the job that people have. Most people don't realize their job, their spiritual occupation. They don't think about their spiritual occupation. And so, with a little bit of poking and prodding, you can generally tell what your own occupation is by the things that are some of the things you're best gifted to do. Okay? So if you're gifted in a particular area, chances are that's an area where God will put you to work. And so what you should think about is that, yeah, I have these skills. How can these skills do something positive for the kingdom? Okay? So your ordination has to do with the idea of you being given a calling. But increasing in generosity and intimate knowledge of our master. Okay, this is the word da'at. As I've taught you before, da'at means an intimate awareness. Okay? Adam knew Eve, so there was an intimacy between he and her, and she conceived and she bore the children. So, here, what Hakam Safed is trying to do is tell you that you need to have an intimate relationship with Messiah. So, now, now that you've been attending Sunday morning classes, classes with His Eminence Rabbi Hillel, and classes here on Tuesday night. If I say that you need to have an intimate relationship with the Messiah, with the Master and Redeemer Yeshua Mashiach, what does that mean to you now, versus the way that you would have interpreted that a few years ago?
Oh, Your Eminence, a few years ago, I don't think we would even considered the thought of maybe I should do things differently because I'm not living for God. I mean, the more Torah you learn, the more you become aware of. You become aware of how important the spiritual realm is. And without a knowledge of the spiritual realm, or even a, you know, most people in life don't even acknowledge that there is a spiritual realm. You know, right. I think about like coworkers, and I mean, they might mention God every once in a while, but they don't think about how the spiritual realm is all around us all the time.
Right.
And, or that God is always speaking and we just don't listen.
Right.
You know, we're busy in life and we forget to stop and listen. So, I mean, those are things that I wouldn't have considered 10 years ago.
Right.
You know.
Right. Anyone else?
Well, Your Eminence, that's a very tough question, because my relationship with Yeshua started when I was a very young child, and he saved my bacon a lot of times, and in our walk, in our challah, to this point, I've always just prayed that I'd be in the center of Hashem's will. And what y'all have done is kind of moved Yeshua from the advocate or the my replacement to my redeemer, yet I have more responsibility to maintain the mitzvot and the commandments of Hashem. Before it was, you know, well, I'm saved by grace, and
right.
You know, whenever I mess up, you know, that's, you know, I just go on and try not to do it again. But it's a different thing there.
Right. Okay, so tell me how, if he's telling you now you need to have an intimate relationship with the Master now, from your understanding now, what would you do to develop that? What specific things will you do to increase your relationship with, we could say here with Messiah, but ultimately it's going to be also, he's the mediator for a particular time in the way that he is, because he's got a messianic role, a Messiah role, but eventually it will bring us closer to God. So what specific thing do you have to do to have an intimate relationship with God, or with Messiah, excuse me?
Well, you touched on it when you said occupation.
Okay,
because
very good.
Until, and this has been on my heart for the past week or so, or month, until we find out our occupation, we can really not become intimate with the Messiah, because we're not doing what we're supposed to be doing. You see what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. I understand exactly what you're saying.
And that's what I'm saying. It's, we need to be searching for our occupation and want to figure out what our occupation is. And I don't know if I found out my occupation, to tell you the truth. 67 years old, and I don't know what my job is. You know, that's kind of sad.
Well, here, I mean, that can be developed with, you know, some time and some attention. If you take the time to stop and, you know, you can take a piece of paper and start figuring some of this out. You put on a piece of paper, this is my best skills. Either there are things that I'm not, and is not my best skills. So you can figure out some of the things that you're qualified to do just from that, okay? But here, let's just simplify it just a little bit. Messiah has to be like Moshe. Okay? It has to be. So that means, obviously, you know, in my mind, I see Moshe as, yes, the lawgiver, but of course he takes the Torah out of the spiritual realm, if we can say it like that, and he gave it to men. This is what Hakam Shaul is saying. He led captivity captive, and he gave gifts to men. Okay, the particular gifts are the Pakidim. Okay, so when we also want to look for our occupation, we need to become intimately acquainted with all the different offices, right? Specifically the seven offices. And then if you are going to graduate from being a pakid into the realm of becoming a rabbi on the Beit Din, then you need to know where your best skill is. Are you dean? Are you justice, really justice oriented? Or do you, I know justice, but do you have compassion on people? Okay, so that is more, for example, that may be a little bit more closer, say, to my office in Da'at. A lot more to say about that, but even the Hacham actually is on the side of being much more compassionate. His Eminence will just invariably tell you, you say, I need to know how to do this or that, and he'll tell you, this is the halacha, but now I'm going to tell you how you can work around the halacha. Okay, and that is not in anything. That is actually to show specifically, I'll say it like this, the fatherly compassion of that particular office. A balanced father, knows how to correct his children, but he also knows how to love them and give them, the blessings of their life. Messiah has to be like Moshe. So, that being said, you can stop and think for a minute, and we talked just briefly about this Sunday, about service that Yehoshua gave to Moshe. And that service actually elevated him to the place of being Moshe's replacement. And he was actually, through the time in the wilderness, and even prior to that, but through the time in the wilderness, he's becoming a Torah scholar, but at the same time, he is developing something that he is suited for when they go into the land. And he's a tremendous military leader. Tremendous. You read the story and you say that, Joshua says that, God just make the sun stand still. And you think that that means that, hey, if I had 10 more minutes, I could get the job done. But if I have to stop now and come back tomorrow, then it's going to be, all hell on earth. That was not what he was saying. What he was saying is, right now I have the advantage because the sun is in their eyes and they can't see to fight. So if you stop the sun right now, then I have the military advantage because they can't see. So he's a great military leader. He understands exactly what he did. He intentionally positioned himself in the place, knowing that when the battle starts, that the sun's going to be in his enemy's eyes. So, here's this guy that's been bringing Moshe his coffee every morning. But that wasn't his greatest skill, but that was one thing that was important for him as, a student for Moshe. And I know that there's ideas that Moshe, wanted his son to be the successor, but Moshe couldn't argue with the fact that, look, this guy's been here all along and he has the qualifications to do exactly what needs to be done. Okay, so Moshe is the Torah giver, and so you find in Messiah exactly the same thing. So if you want to speak to somebody who loves the Torah, you have to know the Torah. If you want to get more intimately acquainted with that individual, then you need to know the Torah. Because when you start talking to him, if you're not talking Torah, he doesn't want to talk to you. We can talk about things all day long, different things in people's lives all day long. But when it's said and done, all I really care about having a discussion about is what we're doing. The occupation at hand. So I say that to you because you can get more intimately acquainted with Messiah, understanding and knowing his character by understanding the mitzvot. I've said that the reason why the Mishnah and the Oral Torah starts with the Shema is because Yeshua said so. And what I'm saying is that all of the sages accepted what he said. You don't see a living documentation of that now in our day, but at that time, I know that the reason they accepted it was because Yeshua said it. He wasn't the village idiot that a lot of people want to make him out to be. He was highly, highly skilled in all the Torah. Look at even in the Nazarene Codicil, all the people that come and want counsel from him. So, if you're going to be acquainted with Messiah, the thing that will interest him the most will be the fact that you are interested in the Torah. Okay? Now, it says to him, be honor. Now, understanding something. Honor does not mean worship. But that does it does mean giving someone a proper acknowledgement for their place, their skills, etc. Okay? So if he's Messiah, then he should have a great amount of honor. Moshe, for his activities in life, deserves a great amount of honor. Yehoshua, on down through the prophets, through all these differences, okay? They deserve the honor that is due them. But that doesn't mean that we fall down and worship them. Okay? To him be the honor, now unto that day which is eternal. Amen. Now, this being said, you can look at page 39. And you can identify the context. And you can see how these things will be woven together. Now my sister is here, so she can tell you. Much how that many of you know that chances are we'll probably end up somewhere in Genesis before it's said and done. Romans on page 34.
I almost said, or Romans 8.
Exactly. Romans chapter 8 was the dark place in my Bible. Does everybody understand that? You know what I'm saying? If I say the dark place in my Bible, the dark place means all the place where all the underlines and highlights and all of those are. You know, the page is not white anymore. It's multicolored. That's the dark place of your Bible. I spent more hours and time teaching on this particular set of verses and came to the realization that those who don't have condemnation are those who are doing their best to become intimately acquainted with Messiah by doing what's right. And as Adonai Avinair was saying earlier, many people Many people don't stop to look at Yeshua as a human being able to accomplish what he did as a human being. But if we make him a man, all the troubles land on our shoulders. You can't say, oh, he had special favor, he had the divine spirit, he had blah, blah, blah. He does have, right here in Romans, it'll tell you straight up that you have the same spirit in you that he had in him. And I have taught from that particular aspect forever. And it takes away your excuse. Now, I'm not being condescending, but I'm saying now we're left and we can say, well, before, you know, we'd say, oh, he just had this little trap door inside of his mind. And from, you know, whenever he wanted, he could just be God. And then, you know, he could close that trap door and then he could be just a human. Come on. It doesn't work. It really does not work. But when we realize that he was a human being, Moshe was a human being, all these men were human beings. And the thing that was the most important in their life is the fact that they loved God and they loved the Torah. So, if you keep guard, you're guarding yourself, and you are you're able to overcome many of your difficulties. I was looking to see. Hard some days to know where you're at and which genre you're in. So I've been working on James. Okay. So Adam is given a job and we have discussed this before, but basically he doesn't do his job. But the Torah tells us that God said to Adam, chapter 1:28, be fruitful and multiply, subdue, and take dominion over all of the earth. Now, His Eminence uses a phrase that puts a spanner in the wheel. Anybody understand that? That means to put a wrench in the wheel, and the wheel can't turn anymore. A cog, yes. Okay. So, what I just did is deflated all of the idea that we'll all just go back to heaven, or we'll all just go back to the garden. Did you hear it, or did you miss it? Verse 26, let us make man our own image and our own likeness. Let them have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the birds of the air and over the cattle and the earth and over every creeping thing that is on the earth. And God created man in his own image, and in the image he created him, male and female, he created them. Then God blessed them. And God said to them, be fruitful and multiply, fill the earth, subdue it. Have dominion over the fish of the sea and the birds of the air and over every living thing that moves on the earth. Did you get it? Not in the garden. He didn't tell him these things in the garden. Don't go in the garden and go floating around every day in this sheer bliss. He gave him a job to do, and the job was to take control and authority over all of the earth. Now, what does that do? Yeah, I love the garden. I want to be in the garden. But garden was what? Garden was Sabbath. The garden was a picture of Sabbath. It's not... This is very difficult to say, and often most people won't realize what you're saying, but the garden is not literal. But it was, in fact, very spiritual. So if you want to get into the garden, you can't go in physically, but you can go in spiritually. But what this does, instead of saying, you know, here, look at here, let's all go to Israel. God didn't say, make sure you do all these things and inherit Israel and tell the rest of the world, sorry about your luck. So now we've been unfolding a context that's been established here by Hakam Tzafet. And the thing is, you have an ordination, you have a job. Now everybody starts to look at the hidden day, the millennium, etc. And they start to say, oh, I can't wait to get there. You know, in the 70s, in the 80s, the early 80s. Christianity was so caught up in this idea of the rapture that they were literally bankrupting themselves. They were running their credit cards to the place that there was no more credit for them. Why? And if you stop and think about this, you're saying these guys were supposed to be Christians? They were running their credit card up like that because they knew God's coming back tomorrow and we won't have to worry about it. So, this is back to what we're trying to be understanding about the coming time, and to be quite concise, the coming time is what you make of it, what you made of what it's going to be. So, I think I've established, starting on page 35, that 1,000 years is not 1,000 years. And what Akam Safed says here is it's the day which is eternal. And the world to come, as the sages say, is a world that is coming. It is coming. It is continually in the process of getting closer. I taught this in a church one day from Revelation. It says on page 36, it said, and I, John, Yochanan, saw the holy city, the city separate, New Jerusalem, coming down from God out of heaven. It's coming. The new world is coming. But, unfortunately, that's not what was expected by Christianity. What did the Christianity expect?
Us flying up.
That's it. That's it. And I think the proper word for that is going. They misunderstand the idea that is associated with, you know, history and the idea of the king. And the king was not quite as we can think of the king in contemporary times, where a king has this great vast domain. Kings like David was a king, and he was very successful. And he was successful, but he never fully realized the promise of God to Abraham. But out of all of the possibilities, all the times in Israel's life, it came closest to being the realm of domain that was promised to Abraham. But when the king went out to war, everybody followed him out the gate, so to speak. But when the messenger came and said, the king is coming, he's been victorious in his battles, all the people didn't just wait inside of the city and say, well, he'll get here soon enough. They went out to meet him. But they went right back into the place where that they had been dwelling and living. And so the whole idea of, quote, this rapture was to go out and meet the king. And when you go meet the king, then you come back. Okay, so that they try to make this. And when you really study it, and you study it, and you study it, for the sake of being objective, when you study it, it doesn't stand up. But you got to stop reading English. So, we'll go meet him in the air. What does that mean? Air has an association with what? With the Ruach. The breathing. How can you meet him? Pay attention to what he's been breathing out. Okay? I'm going to stop right here. Kabbalat Shabbat, my favorite part of Kabbalat Shabbat is Nedid Yefesh, and this Bowie Kala, Pnei Shabbat Nekabala. My heart truly wants to reach out to Hashem and Sabbath at that particular point. There's a lot more to be said. Perhaps we will continue to unfold some of these mysteries as we go along. One second.